stick or without sticky?
So mine was different. I have all these questions. Okay. There is, so I'll just keep this. I'll just fold it over.
Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So this next section, we're starting on the Tatparya Lingas. Right. The whole idea of all these is that we have a logical understanding how to approach the study of knowledge. And so then, between the Panchanga Nyaya, the Tatparya Lingas, and the grammar, then we should have a very solid basis for how to approach or discuss, analyze the scriptures. Right? Does that make sense? Tatparya lingas are used for analyzing the ascertainment, purport, or meaning conveyed in scripture. This approach is used mainly for our own benefit and is therefore referred to as svartha anuman, as opposed to the Panchanga Nyaya, which is known as Pararta Anuman, or method used for convincing others. So in other words, you present something according to Panchanga Linga, but you understand or study something according to the Tatparya Lingas. Does that make sense? It means if you want to know a specific point. It means it's presented, the presentation is Panchanga Nyaya. Therefore, you will analyze the Panchanga Nyaya. But to understand, you know, what fully comes out, what's very important within it, then the Tatparya Lingas help us in that. Right? It's just for making sure that we understand what is important. What class is that?
English.
Oh. But they have it right here or have it down there?
In the building corner.
Really? It sounds like it's coming from over here. But there's here or they're there? No, but that chanting is coming from where? Oh, okay. But why would it come down here so slowly in that corner?
Maybe from this.
To better understand the intent of the Tatparya Lingas, let us consider the following analogy. The government enacts laws, but later in the course of their enforcement, doubts may arise with regard to their intention. Another law is then enacted to settle its meaning. This is the law of interpretation, mimamsa. In this way, Uttari Mimamsa or Vedanta is the law of interpretation for the Vedas, which constitute the eternal law of the Lord. Thus, Tatparya Lingas are considered are certain indicators within the Shastra itself that help determine its purport. According to Mimamsa Shastra, there are six ways to determine the meaning of Vedic pronouncement or Veda Vakya. Can you go up and just tell them class has started, so if they need to still work, they can do it with their mouth shut? In this way, Uttara Mimamsa or Vedanta is the law of interpretation for the Vedas, which constitute the eternal law of the Lord. Thus, Tatparya Lingas are certain indicators within the Shastra text itself that help determine its purport. According to Mimamsa Shastra, there are six ways to determine the meaning of Vedic pronouncements, or Veda Vakya. The Acharyas or commentators of Shastra thus determine the purport of the Shastra by the principle of Shat Vidhanga Lingas, or six characteristic signs. These six are employed not only in Vedic passages, but also to any book, article, or discourse. These six are known as the principle of Shat Vidhanga Lingas, or six characteristic signs, otherwise also known as the Tatparya Lingas. So this is the standard Vedic understanding of how to, find out exactly what's the main points within either a individual text, or a chapter or an article or a whole book, whatever it is. The principles always apply. These indicators are described in the following verse. The beginning and end, repetition, uniqueness, result, praise, and illustrations are the sixfold indicators in ascertaining the purport of a text. I think this is coming from the Chandogya Upanishad. Thus, according to the above verse, in order to understand any piece of Vedic literature, it is essential to know the purport of its subject matter. For ascertaining the purport, one first tries to grasp the meaning of what is said in the introduction and conclusion of the subject in question. One then looks for statements that are repeatedly stated, that praise the subject matter, that give the uniqueness of the topic, and that conveys the results. In addition, one looks for illustrations used in the text to describe the subject in question. Right? In other words, if there's illustrations given, these illustrations are illustrating something. So what is being illustrated? Does that make sense? To facilitate our understanding, let us briefly dive into the sweet ocean of Vedanta philosophy. The Tatparya Lingas state that the concluding portion of a work contains its essence. Thus, Vedanta, being the concluding portion of the Vedas, delineates the purpose of the Vedas. Accordingly, through a variety of subjects are presented in the Vedas. All of them have the singular purpose of leading us to the Vedantic inquiry into the absolute truth, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Right? So, as Prabhupada mentioned before, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, that's the point, because that's the opening point of the Veda. I mean, the Vedanta Sutra. And then Vedanta Sutra itself is the end of the Veda, Vedanta. So what's in the beginning, what's at the end, then is important, right? So the Veda always starts with Om, or starts with Purusha Shukta, it ends with Vedanta Sutra. So then we can understand from this, that this is important. So then the whole Vedic works can be viewed through this understanding. That makes sense. So the what is being then therefore given in the Vedanta Sutra, that then will be how one will interpret the whole Veda. That makes sense? Like that. For us it works nicely. We're following the Uttara Mimamsa. So the Vedanta is that declination of the Uttara Mimamsa. So then it works out very nicely, because it also, like we said here, falls in the end, so it gives the conclusion. So then, like this, there's six schools, and they each have their way that they interpret the Veda. Right? So you have Vyasadeva from Vedanta Sutra, and then five other authors. Right? We'll get into that much later in this class. Right? That's one of the major studies in this course is the six systems of philosophy. Having established the purpose of the Vedas, let us analyze, according to Tatparya Lingas, the sixth chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad, which explicitly illustrates these six indicators as discussed below. Right? Because some will call this, some devotees refer to this as Jaimini Mimamsa. They give it to that the credit of it to him, but we see here, it's just Upanishadic, how you study, the verse, how you approach. Jaimini is Purva Vimamsa, so then he's going to, of course, use the same system to interpret his verses according to karma. Right? Well, then, Uttarmimamsa means you're going to interpret the Veda according to Upanishads, or liberation. Does that make sense? So, everybody uses these six, right? Otherwise, why is it established in the Veda? So it's not Jaimini's system. He may be the one that makes it prominent. He discusses it a lot, like in the last lesson in the Panchangalinga, Panchanganyaya, that in there then definitions were being given from a commentator in his line. Does that make sense? So it's standard things everyone accepts, just like everyone accepts Chanakya. You know, it's just very clearly and very properly delineated. So everyone accepts that. Then they may have their particular commentaries or particular angles or usages, you know, understandings. But the main system then is everybody accepts. So in the same way as this Tatpurya Lingas is accepted by everyone. And then it's just a matter of applying it. Okay, so this is Chandogya Upanishad. Chandogya Upanishad is also, at least for us, is special in that it's the Samaveda. It's the Upanishad for the Samaveda. So we in Lord Chaitanya's line are following the Samavedi tradition of the samskars. Gopal Bhatta Goswami gave us the samskars according to the Samaveda, like that. So the first one, Upakrama and Upasamhara. The harmony of the initial and concluding passages. Upakrama means the initial part of a work, and Upasamhara, the conclusion. These two refer to the beginning and the end of the topic, which reveal what is meant to be conveyed. Thus, if the first and concluding parts of a work speak of the same idea, it is to be taken as its subjects. Right here, so now we're going from Chandogya. Upakrama, Chandogya 6:2-1. Sadeva Saumya Idhamagra Asite. In the beginning, O dear one, all this was one truth alone. Then at the end, Upasamhara, Chandogya 6:6-13. Aitadatmyam iram sarvam. The absolute truth is the self of everything. Both Upakrama and Upasamhara indicate the nature of the absolute truth, who is the supersoul of all. Right? Does that make sense? So it opens with, so we see like also in Manu, it opens with the point that when the sages are interested to know about Varnashram, that's in connection to the Supreme, so that one can know the Supreme. Right, and the last verse says that, you know, for a Brahmin who studies this, then he will perfect his life because he'll be able to connect everything to the Lord. Right, so then we understand is the connection of the activities of oneself to the Lord, that's actually the point of the book. Right, so that way then you see all the other text in Manu, or here in Chandogya, in that connection. Does that make sense? Interesting that most all the shastras open with creation, right? So then that's your upakrama, that there must be something, that the point is its connection with the Lord, right? But others not understanding this or having a different method of interpretation, then they change this approach. Does that make sense? So the idea is this very obvious in the book. It opens this way, it closes this way. So then everything in the middle is to be used that way. So all the various aspects of Varnashram, or in here in the Upanishad, is to be used in connection with the Lord, not some other way. So people say, oh, well, that's not devotional. No, but it's meant to be devotional. If you're not seeing it as devotional, you've missed the point. Right? The book is written as a assistant in devotion to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So, abhyas, repetition. Repetition refers to the subject matter that is repeatedly stated within a topic. If the same idea or view is repeated in a work, it must be understood as the main theme. Right? So therefore you always see Krishna, like in the Gita, saying, perform your duties in knowledge, with detachment, thinking of me, for me. He says that many, many times, so you can understand, you know, this is the theme, right? It's always something connected with surrendering to Krishna, doing everything for Krishna, sarva dharmam paditya, give up everything, just surrender to me, do all your work for me, you know, man mana bhava mad bhakto. Does that make sense? So he's always bringing out this point of just, you take shelter of Krishna, practice devotional service in connection with Krishna. Right? Perform your activities in connection with Krishna. You know, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away in charity, should be done as a sacrifice to Krishna. Right? So we can understand this is the theme of the work. Right? That's, does that make sense? So that's the Mahavakya Tattvam Asi, or that thou art, which reveals the relationship of the individual soul and the Supreme Lord, is repeated 9 times using 9 different examples to establish simultaneous oneness and difference between the individual soul and the super soul. This is also propounded by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the philosophy of Achinta Bheda Abheda Tattva. Technically, we don't call it a Mahavakya like that, but it comes out a lot, and probably from this Chandogya then Shankaracharya took it as his main statement. Right? Maha means, you know, great, and Vakya means, you know, statement or what is spoken. So the he uses it that you are that, meaning, you know, you are the Brahman, you are the spiritual. He uses it to do that. But here it is being shown in the Upanishad itself as how the living entity connects with the Lord, right? Does that make sense? So then the Achinta Bheda Veda Tattva element, simultaneously oneness and difference, then is coming out. So you can understand that's a main underlying theme. Yeah? 3, Apurvata, uniqueness, denotes an idea mentioned for the first time. As background information may be necessary to establish a new concept, so an idea expressed afresh in the natural course of presentation is to be taken as the purpose of or message intended. Right? So in other words, you're bringing up some new idea, but before that, to get to a new idea, you have to bring someone from where they are at present to the point where they'll be able to understand or appreciate this new idea. Right? So all that gets you there, that's not the point. The point is that fresh idea. Does that make sense? Then you know that's important. See, it means this will come up here in this Apurvata and also in the later one. Is that so, what do you call it? Anuvakya. Here, yes. In connection to Chandogya Upanishad, reveals the uniqueness of a subject matter of the Vedas, that which is not known by any other means of knowledge. The truth revealed by the Mahavakya Tattvamasi is the Apurvata. For the statement cannot be known by any other means of knowledge. Means you have Apurvata. Okay, Apurvata. Means that's what you're trying to get to, but then so many other explanations will be there to get to that. Okay? Yes.
Let me take an example, like Dhruva Maharaj, who was doing yoga, but for some material benefit, and at the end he got the goal, and that's the meaning.
Yes, you could say like that. Means the point is developing your relation to the Lord, because what we see is his mother tells him, well, if you want to obtain, you know, the relief from your problem or attain what you want, you have to go to the Supreme Lord. Right? So there it's mentioned there. Then they come in contact with Narad Muni. He mentions it again. Right? And then he meets the Lord, and then that's the discussion. So then you can see that this has been mentioned 3 times in this pastime. So that will be your prominent theme. Now the thing that he's upset, you know, with the whole pastime with his brother and father and stepmother, or he goes to the forest, or he does his austerities, that specific is not the main point. The main point is his relationship with the Lord, finding the Lord, attaining to the shelter of the Lord. Does that make sense? Therefore, then, that example has principles that apply in it, that there's going to be inquiry. You have to want to know. You have to approach Guru. Right? So he approached his mother, as Bharatma Pradarshak, he approached Narad Muni as the Siksha Diksha Guru, right? He performs austerity, means the proper performance of duties. So since it's in the Satya Yuga, then it's going to be meditation. If it was another time, Narad Muni would have given him a different process, right? So some proper process is followed, approach of guru, that enthusiasm is there, you apply it, right? Tadvidi pranipatena, paripashnena, sevaya, all these elements then were connected. So then we see is that that's there, so we can apply that in our life. Otherwise, the modern academic would have us believe that this does not apply to us, because we're not going to do that kind of austerity, or we're not going to, you know, we're not 5 years old, or, you know, there's no forest left anymore, you know, you can't go anywhere, you know, so, you know what I'm saying? But that's not the point. So that's why it's important, these Tatparya Lingas, because then you actually know what's going on. Otherwise, for the modern academic, they take it that anything that you do, you know, it's all equal, right? It means this could be just as important as that. You don't want to assign any more importance, right? Unless, of course, it's their particular opinion, then, of course, it's more important. Does that make sense? So then... But here, then, there's a method for judging what is more important and what's not. And it's scientific. It's not sentiment. Right? Like that. You're getting it from authority. Like that. Okay. Fala. Right? Is there any questions? Or, right? Yes.
The moment when Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that you should combine work and knowledge.
Yes. Work and, that's a unique thing. Is that what you want to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good example of this uniqueness. You know, is that everybody knows karma, everyone knows gyan. Here he's presenting karma and gyan together. That's very unique. Right? Just like everyone knows advaita, everyone knows dvaita, but to present them both simultaneously together, working with no contradiction, that's unique. Or that karma and gyan can work simultaneously. That's unique, because otherwise they don't. Karma, you can't have full knowledge to, means you have knowledge of the karma, but you don't have full knowledge, otherwise why would you do it? Right? Why would you put all so much effort into going to the heavenly planets for a temporary time, thinking that it's amara, it's deathless? You know? So that means that's not so smart. Right? And the jnanis, they have knowledge, but they don't do any work. So to take the knowledge of jnana and the work of karma and combine that, that's dynamic. How about the material desire of the karmi and the lack of work of the jnani? That's also a popular theme these days, right? So that's a loser. Okay. So that's very unique, because actually our philosophy is unique. Or in the Chaturshloki, that Krishna says he's entered into everything. Everything's coming from him. He is everything. At the same time, he's different from it. That's something very unique. Right? So we see this, technically, we can see is the uniqueness is actually, means there may be so many things that are unique, but the uniqueness is actually to bring out this philosophy, because it's the only thing that's really unique. Right? That was a very good point. So one second. Yeah, you had something?
Yeah, just, so these actual concepts that bring out the uniqueness of the Lord, for example,
a
few examples you've just given,
this is
Apurvata. Okay, it's not like background information about it, it's the actual point.
Yeah, the background of information gets you to this, because you have to explain how karma, I mean, you can take it that it's also a unique presentation, that in describing karma, that it's not the result that's so important, it's the mentality behind it, right? You're going to work you're working for a result, but that result's not for you. That's a unique point, you know? Or that you're going to, perform these duties, but without trying to, you don't have any motive other than the proper performance of duties. So that's unique, because common is, I want it, I work. I don't want it, I don't work. You know what I'm saying? So that's what's common about karma. I want to go to the heavenly planets, I work for it. Jnana, I don't want to go to the heavenly planets or get any material result, I don't work for it. So that's standard. But I work, but I don't work for any result. That's more unique. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay?
How would you understand the Bhagavad Gita in terms of the beginning and ending statements?
Beginning? You have dharma kshetre. Mm-hmm. Right? So, in place of dharma, and then you end sarva dharma pratityaja. So you understand as dharma is to be performed, but it's supposed to be performed in connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? Because the thing is it's not necessarily so obvious, right? Because you do have the author and his presentation. It means, why would you write a book unless there's something important or different or unique, right? So he's trying to bring that out. So then also just the presentation, then you'll see they'll also write in unique ways. Special, you know, something different. You know, there's standard ways to do it, so some who just want to get down to the work don't get too poetic and just present it very straightforward. Like an Arthashastra, it's very straightforward, it's very obvious. Your Anubandha Chatushtaya is very obvious. You know, these different aspects, your Tatparyalingas, they're very obvious. Because he wants it to be, because it's a summary. Not even a summary. There would be, he takes from, I think he lists the works even, like 20 or 30 different works that are really hard to find, rare, people don't know about them anymore, that are on this subject matter. So before, the Arthashastra is a broad body of work, right? But unfortunately, because of time, things are being lost, people don't know, people haven't practiced or applied. So then he's going through and taking the essence of all these works and putting it into one work. You know, so that one, if these other things are lost, then something remains. Two is that in studying this broad amount of work, you may or may not understand these essential points, so therefore it's written there. Mm-hmm. Right? And three, because it's been freshly published, then it's again, you know, available. While these other ones haven't been published for so long, that, you know, that they're unavailable. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's very, very clear. He doesn't. How do you say? May not get into such poetics and that, but like Vyasadeva, then he'll tend to be very, you know, make it very interesting, like that. So it's not with just one reading that you've gained everything from it, you know, in the way of poetics. You know, there's more and more that can be tasted in it. Well, Chanakya is not writing his work as a poetic work. He's writing it as a very practical body of knowledge to teach to, you know, administrators and leaders of society. Does that make sense? Yeah. So he just wants to make sure it's obvious. Okay, next, phala. Objective or fruit. Phala is the result. If in the course of a work it is stated, by acting in this manner you will gain such and such benefit, the purpose of the work is to persuade you to act in the manner suggested. Right? So already in the Anubandha Chatushtaya it's referred to this. So now in the book it comes up again. Then we understand, you know, that this what the purpose is. So the book will be giving the method to obtain that result. Right? So therefore you need that theme. Right? Surrender to the Supreme Lord is the theme. So it says by surrendering, then you will, you know, get all benefit. Then you know this book then teaches you how to surrender. You know what I'm saying? In other words, why six? Because there are different aspects, you know, of what you're trying to. Because here, phala means your result, your prayojan, like that. So then, example, phalam, or the result mentioned in the text, is knowledge of the absolute truth, which brings about moksha, or liberation. The Upanishad therefore reveals the subject matter to the knowledge of self-realization, to be self-realization. The text in the Chandogya Upanishad 6.14.2 goes as follows. Tasya tvadeva chiram yavanan yavana vimokshe ata sampatsye. The one who has got a teacher knows the truth. He is free in spite of his limited body. He is free even from the material body once the body dies. So then he's giving the result here, right? So that means then we can see here is that this being the whole point, then the result is you become freed from the material contamination, freed from material entanglement. But to do that, then you have to know a teacher. You have to have a teacher, right? So that's very important. So this book will be showing you how to approach a teacher, how to utilize that knowledge to get out of the material world, right? And getting out of the material world means that you're approaching the Supreme, so that you'll get out of the material world and attain to the Supreme. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Would the prohibition also come into the phala? If you don't follow this, then you will...
Yeah, it could be. That's just... But that wouldn't be the main part. That means the fruit would be the main thing. The other would be side aspects, just to make you inspired, right? Because some people are inspired because it's done to please the Supreme... Because it pleases the Supreme Lord. So some people will be motivated by that. Some people will be motivated, it gets you out of the material world. Some people are motivated because it'll give you a good result in the material world. And some will be motivated because if you don't do it, you'll get a bad result in the material world. Mm-hmm. So any of these four, you know, will be, you know, in other words, your karma, jnana, bhakti, or lowest is just, you know, the reaction of sin, like that. Does that make sense? You know, so if that doesn't inspire somebody, okay, so you go to hell. What's the big deal? Right? You know, I got my bucket, I'm going like that. And so then, you know, they're quite happy. So then you point out what is going on in those hells. Then it may be less inspiring. You know what I'm saying? So then, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, using this example, so you always start from the highest.
It means you write according to your audience. You'd always, in other words, use something more nice. You know, devotees you always talk about as pleasing to Krishna, but if that doesn't work, then, you know, you say it'll get you out of the material world. If that doesn't work, then, you know, you'll have like so many times, well, like, you get devotees, they'll be disturbed because their family life is not going nicely. All right? So then you try to explain what are the Vedic principles by which that will go nicely. Not that family life is that what we're looking for. The point is we're trying to free ourselves from material contamination and situate ourselves in devotional service. Right? Because that's actually what will please Krishna. But because we're distracted from just what will please Krishna to what pleases us. And therefore, to distract or have the living entity successfully decide that this is not so important, right? Then you need to show them that it's not so important. So to show them it's not so important for third class intelligence means they actually have to do it. And in doing that, if they didn't get a good result, they won't consider the work done nicely. You know what I'm saying? Oh, if I just done this, then it would have been fine. No, it still would have not been fine. You know, like that. Unless you follow the Vedic principles, it won't be fine. And even when it's fine, that's as good as it gets, right? Because otherwise we have this idea, we can make it better and better and better. No, there's a limit. So you follow the Vedic principles, then it's as good as it gets. Then you can actually compare material to spiritual. Right? We've heard material is temporary, it's full of suffering, it's full of this and that. But we have this idea, no, I can get around it. I know all the loopholes. I will be happy, right? Because the Vaikuntha Brahma and the Ananda Brahma. So because of that, then the living entity goes on in their ignorance. So then the Vedic idea is okay, you have these distractions, therefore go for it. Right? You think you're going to be happy in you know, the family life and with money and facility and all these, go for it. Right? But at the same time, is you're practicing Krishna consciousness. Right? And then, so proper, in other words, just as you should properly be performing Krishna consciousness, you should be properly performing one's material duties. Then one gets the best result. Now, if you're getting your best result from your devotional activities, and you compare that to the best result you could get from material activities, how are they going to add up? The spiritual, but if you haven't done it, that if you don't have faith in the Vedas, you don't have faith that this is the best way to do it. Therefore, when you apply it that way and get a good result, then you have faith that that's as good as it gets. Otherwise, if you don't have faith in the Veda, you'll think it can be better than that. Therefore, any devotee who rejects the Vedic principles, they're condemning themselves to stay in the material world, basically. No, unless they can just fully absorb themselves in Krishna, and that's all. But their lifestyle doesn't reflect that, because they're speaking against the Vedic literature, the Vedic lifestyle. So that means they have another idea that's different from Krishna's. So how will that be sarvadharma paritya? Because even your modern academic or modern scientific thinking, that's a religion. A religion is you're taking a nature of something. So a scientist takes the nature as everything can be observed, everything can be mathematically documented. So they're taking that as nature. So it's a religion. Right? And according to that, then they base all of their other aspects of life around that. Does that make sense? You know, academics do the same. You know, you're just general sinful person or material. They each have a life, so they have their own religion. Because they have an interpretation of how things work. What is the nature of something? But because of that, then it's faulty, and it's not going to get them either a good result, or it's not going to get them a good understanding. Because it's with knowledge and practice that you get realization. So they can never get realization. Right? They can maybe have a good understanding of things, or if by accident they practice things that are according to the Vedic principle, because they are humans, the whole material existence is designed by God. So if you're going to get, if you're smart enough to get a result or a notice what works, then what you're noticing is actually God's laws. But you don't know the law really, you've just observed it, so therefore you can articulate some of it. You know, like, you know, the older people in their 60s, 70s, they can tell you a lot because they've just seen things. But they don't necessarily know the Vedic principle that they're talking about. So it won't be complete, it won't be in connection necessarily with the Lord. You know, so it won't be, its fullness will not be appreciated. So the idea is this, you practice devotional service to the fullest, you're practicing whatever your material needs are, you know, in the proper way, you know, in other words, to its fullest, then you can very confidently understand that there's nothing to gain in the material world, right? Because the fullness of even the material still is based on the same principles of the spiritual. You're performing your duty without desire for the results, right? That's a general principle. Whether it's spiritual or it's material, because you don't chant Hare Krishna for your own benefit, you chant to please Krishna. Same way as you perform your daily activities, you know, or family activities or economic, because the result is going to be used in some way connected to Krishna. Right? So there's no difference. But how those duties are performed, what's the etiquette, what's the mentality, what's the culture, that aspect then is, you'll only get it consistently presented through the Vedas. Because then the philosophy and the culture will match. Otherwise, for some, they don't match really well. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay, Artavad, eulogy. Glorification by eulogistic or condemnatory passages. Okay, somebody just saying about going to hell. That's what we were discussing before. So here is, you're using the opposite. Here's where the condemnatory will come in. Artavad is what is eulogized if, in narrating a story, a particular matter receives a special praise. This particular point must be regarded as the purpose of the work or speech in question. Example, in this Upanishad, Artavad refers to those statements that praise the subject matter. Thus, the absolute truth is praised as being endowed with the powers of creation, sustenance, and dissolution in verses 6.23, 6.84, and 6.86, respectively. Right? So like in the Gita, you'll have all these chapters, like the middle six chapters are talking about the Supreme Lord and devotional service. So to describe the Supreme Lord, you have three chapters where they're talking about the universal form. So it's technically not the universal form that's important. It's the person being described through that discussion. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's how we can take the important point out of prayers to demigods, right? That there'll be so many prayers will be there. But the point is, what is being glorified? It's certain position or potency, right? And so that is coming from the Supreme Lord. So we don't have any problem with those prayers, technically. Because we know they're coming from the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? Like that. Or if there's condemnatory statements, then we know that, you know, what it's condemning then is the opposite of what you're trying to, you know, obtain. You know, does that make sense? So both we see in the Artavad and in this, what was before? The Apurvata, uniqueness. There may be so much background information given or things that are there that is not the specific main point. Right? That's why the Tatparyalingas are important, because in a work you have to explain something. So many stories are there, examples are there, different, literary techniques are used to bring you to the point of being able to express what it is you want to say. Right? It's just like, let's say, you want to say something that's a little bit tricky to another person. You don't just say it in one sentence. You might take 10 minutes to say this and that and get around to it, and that's not what's important. You know, and then you finally get to the point. Right? So this background is there. That's a common point. So it's important information. It might be very nice things, but it's not the main point you're making. It doesn't mean that those are not important elements, but it's not the main theme. Right? So if you know the main theme, then you can judge everything else in relationship to that. Right? You know your priorities. That's always a very important thing, is to be able to know priorities. Right? Then, upapatti, logicality. If a viewpoint is established through reasoning, it must be treated as the subject of the work concerned. In Chandogya Upanishad, the upapatti refers to the principle by which the knowledge of absolute truth is logically supported by examples. One example is that of gold and golden ornaments, which is revealed in the Chandogya Upanishad 6.15 as follows. O dear one, just as by knowing one lump of gold, all ornaments made of gold become as well known. In the same manner, the Supreme Lord is the basis of everything. Knowing the Lord, one becomes as well the knower of everything. Thus, the purport of the Chandogya Upanishad, chapter 6, is ascertained by the six indicators as revealing the relationship between the individual soul and the Supreme Lord, who is the cause of everything, and attaining liberation through one attains liberation through devotional service. In the same manner, the fourth topic of the Uttara Mimamsa Sutra is called Faladya, unfolds this identity describing the results of devotional service, or Prayojana Gyan. Right.
Does this make some sense here? Any questions on this?
I have a question on the previous one.
The previous one means on the Artavada.
Mm-hmm. Does this mean if there is some text and there is another text which glorifies that text?
A text glorifying a text.
Yeah. For example, like there is many points in Bhagavatam that glorify the Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm. So we understand is that the Bhagavatam, what's being glorified, is what's important.
Yes,
the glorifications are valuable. But the point of those glorifications is the Bhagavatam. You know what I'm saying? In other words, from all those chapters in Gita where they're glorifying about the Lord, the Supreme, from different angles, the point is the Lord Himself. Right? Means that's the primary topic. The secondary topic may be all those points of glorification. You know, He is the Supreme, He is, you know, one without a second, He is beyond the modes of control of the material energy, He is the controller of everything. So those are all important points. But the main point that all this is trying to make is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the theme. Right? Like that. So understanding Him, worshiping Him, surrendering to Him, this is what you want to do. Right? So all these different of these six add to that. You know, so you understand. So the main thing is about the Supreme Lord. Then what about the Supreme Lord? You know, how to surrender to Him through your work or with your intelligence or with the mind. You know, like that. The devotion, one's faith. So all these will be coming out, but the main theme will be the Supreme Lord. Then you see all these other things behind that, then whatever it took to establish those. Right? Does that make sense? So then you have Sangati. Right? The Sangati is, you know, you have your theme, and then all these other, everything else, the sub-themes and all that, they all are then supporting that main theme. So is this another approach how you can understand that main theme? Okay? Because once you understand that, you know how to interpret everything else. That's why it's interpretation, the law of interpretation. Right? Mimamsa. So how do you interpret it unless you know what's prominent? You know what I'm saying? So if it says, you know, He is beyond the modes of nature, if you take that as prominent, then everything else will be according to that. So worship of the Supreme Lord is just to get you beyond the modes of nature. So that's how the impersonalists change the philosophy. They change the Mimamsa. Does that make sense? So actually, once you understand these things, then dealing with these other philosophies is very simple. Because you just understand what is their method of interpretation. Right? Because they're still going to follow all these main principles. Right, like before we discussed the Upanishad. You know, what is God? What is the jiva? What's the material world? What's the process? What's the result? So they're all going to be describing that. It's just a matter of, because of that, therefore, then they're going to have their interpretation. Then they're going to take all the body of knowledge that's there and bring something out and bring everything else underneath that. So that's how you get different philosophies. It's what they make prominent. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Is that. So then in that, then you have to see is that the Vedas themselves, even though they present all these other philosophies, because they've all come from here. You know what I'm saying? It's the study of the Veda only that these six schools have arisen. Right? And so therefore then they will give their interpretation. But then there's Vyas. Right? It means all other authors are there. Nice. Then there's Vyas. Right? And so then Vyas gives that conclusion. What is actually, even within all these, because it's an important point, but being an important point doesn't mean it's the primary point. So, you know, Vishnu is the absolute personality of Godhead. That's the main point. All other points come in line under there. But someone else, it's not the main point, and they pull this one, and that one pulls this one, and they fight. Yes?
Right, if I understand correctly, just like Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita, and the impersonal is translation of Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and presents it in the proper, with the proper mimamsa. While these other ones, they have some distorted mimamsa. So, therefore, the result of the book is to surrender to Krishna, right? But no one surrenders. Why? Because they've missed the point. Their mimamsa is incorrect. Right? The Prabhupada is correct. Therefore, the result of the book is gained. Right? So in other words, this whole technical point of the philosophy, that's why the principles are so important, because everything's working on that. You understand the principles, and you understand how these other things are working, then you can understand how all the philosophy works. One's not bewildered. Right? It's not this whole big, huge thing. No, there's only essential points. It's given. These six. You only have to target those six, then you know what the work is about. You don't have to know everything. You know everything means you have a great memory, great study habits, lots of time, good dedication and focus. But even you know all that, if you've missed the point, then you've missed the point. So does that make sense? Okay, so then we'll finish this Tatpurya Lingas on Monday. And then we'll move on to the grammatical, the last of the three, how you say? What would you say? Logical methods of presentation and study. Right? So you have the Panchanga Nyaya, the Tatpurya Lingas, and grammar. Like that. All this thing is, yes, is on Vikshiki. Like that. Like that. That'll all be considered. Because Anvikshika means philosophy with nyaya, with logic, that combination. Because we're approaching the grammar as a logical explanation. Because you see so many times in the bhasyas of the acharyas that they use, how do you say, the grammatical explanations. Generally they don't translate for them for us. You can tell Prabhupada's done it when he says, in this verse, you know, this word is significant. Right? He's using a grammatical explanation here. But the problem is this grammar doesn't really matter in English. No one uses grammar as an example to explain something. It's not a culture. You could, but no one does it because it's always changing. It's an art. It's not a science. All right? Well, Sanskrit is a science. Then you have an art of applying it to make it very poetic and sweet and very, you know, attractive. So therefore, in the Sanskrit, the acharyas, then they will give grammatical explanations, how proving according to grammar also that logic. So that's why we're including it. Does that make sense?
No.
Right. Yeah, okay. Did we say Hare Krishna? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay. So is everybody like happy with kind of the direction the class is going?
Yes.
Anybody's not happy? You're happy, you're not?
Yes.
You're happy. You're just saying that because you know you have to say that. So. Otherwise, we'll send in the big boys, rough you up afterwards. put your head on the palm for a second.